So before we started recording with Big Surge, I was playing with the settings on my brand new audio card and I might have screwed up some things. So my quality will not be ideal, but cut me some slack. The Big Surge will be doing most of the talking. It's not the end of the world. It will be better next time. Enjoy. Hello and welcome to Russians with Attitude. We are joined by our friend Big Surge. Hey Surge.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Greetings.
Yeah, and first off, congrats on the baby. Is it a boy or a girl?
Yeah, the most recent is a boy. I don't want to get too into the specifics, but we're working on a brood here, so adding one more and a boy this time around.
I thought it's your first, but yeah, all the more the better.
Yeah, well, for a while at least.
I only have one. Yeah, he turns 1 year old this month. There will be a big anniversary event and I will extort all the relatives hefty sums of money because I said to them that my boy only takes cash. I don't need your stupid toys. So yeah.
Smart toddler.
Yeah, good man.
About your boy, can you please tell us about his height and weight so I can compare the two? Who mocks who? I don't know.
Yes.
I need to know.
So all my kids so far have been in the healthy 8-pound range, you know, not too enormous. But good size.
3 kilograms.
Yeah, so he was
a bit more.
8 pounds, 7 ounces. So I don't know the kilogram conversion, but modest sized, showing off, but not falling behind.
Yeah, the same situation. I childishly thought that it's cool if your baby is a giant, right? That he's like 5 kilograms. But I figured out that...
Probably cool for the father, or not so cool for the mother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's so big now that I can barely lift him up. So it's cool to have a moderately sized baby. That's an adult approach.
Yeah, one thing I will say is when you have multiple children, you acclimate to the growth. And so you get used to holding a toddler. And then when you have another newborn, they feel very, very light. There's this readjustment period. You know, you don't notice the growth day to day, but then when you reset back to a newborn, you're like, this is a very, very small creature.
That's cool. Yeah. Today, among other topics, I would like to discuss various experimental or hypothetical types of weapons. Of course, some of them are completely official, others you cannot really talk about, or you will be labeled as a conspiracy theorist. Except if it is the Russians who are engaging in this sort of thing. I'm talking about the nefarious and mainstream news item of Havana syndrome that is obviously a fact for many American housewives. I'm not sure if it's true. Was it really popular or was it just online phenomenon, this Havana syndrome and discussion?
So I tried to feel this out in advance of our conversation by probing some of my normie relatives. And it doesn't seem like a major topic of conversation in the mainstream, at least in the people that I know. I think that this is partially because after the COVID pandemic, I think that some people are kind of a little more, let's say, alert to hypochondria, right? So we've already had the whole long COVID thing where people are, you know, oh, I've had a headache for 6 months and it's because of a COVID hangover. And I think that there's maybe a little bit of hypochondria fatigue that's making Havana syndrome stick a little. It's not quite as sticky in people's minds as maybe it could have been. So, you know, see, so COVID is a Chinese bioweapon that's providing medical cover for the Russian microwave beam or whatever they're using.
I think it's actually really great discourse because what I think is happening is just basically, well, imagine you're like a, I don't know, 37-year-old unmarried female State Department employee. You have a lifestyle based on alcoholism and unhealthy food and take half a dozen pills every day. This lifestyle catches up with you. You have no motivation to go to work. you just say that everything hurts and come up with a lame schizo excuse, and it turns into an actual diplomatic incident. Like, so sorry, I can't come to work today because Putin gave me long COVID with his Tesla death ray while I was peacefully crying into my ice cream tub while watching Netflix. Like, it's extremely lame, but it's also extremely genius at the same time, because it's a combination of everything like insane liberal types believe about the world. Like, Putin wants to kill me with long COVID Havana syndrome because I'm girl bossing too hard. It's like the perfect narcissistic discourse.
Exactly. And when you think about it, the lifestyle of office workers or federal administrative workers is deeply unhealthy, right? It's a life cycle of sitting hunched in front of a computer under fluorescent lights, sleep deprivation, boxed wine, anti-anxiety medications, and takeout. You know, maybe they get a salad for lunch, and that's, you know, the only thing holding back total organ failure, right? So the idea that these people would suddenly have headaches and back pain doesn't seem... You shouldn't need some sort of supernatural Russian death ray explanation for that. But, these people are sort of physiological time bombs, just the lifestyle of the American bureaucrat.
Imagine the FSB and, like, general staff guys at some strategic meeting, and someone goes like, wait, I didn't even know we had those.
Yeah, well... I bet they wish they'd thought
of
it.
But I think it's good because actually there are a lot of developments and Soviet developments in this sphere. So we shouldn't really rule out it is just not a conspiracy theory, but just some office workers complaining. Although it's probably the case, but still, they are shifting the overtone window. It's possible now to publicly talk about such things. And you are not labeled as an insane person, right? And that's good, I think, because before that, it was carp can be turned into a weapon. That's crazy talk. No one would do that. And now it's kind of more okay. Excuse me, a lot of noise. Kirill, please continue. I will silence all of my household and return.
Okay. The thing about Havana syndrome is that these non-conventional weapons, they do exist, right? There are microwave and heat-based weapons. There are even climate weapons that do exist. It's just a question of their application and the practicality of them.
If I remember correctly, then the U.S. Army used climate weapons back in Vietnam. I think.
Yeah.
Causing like the rain season to start early in Laos or something like that.
Yeah, it was called Operation Popeye, and this is it sounds like a conspiracy theory, but this is
the Russian army does that every single year for the Victory Day parade.
Yeah, and it's it sounds like a conspiracy theory, but it is declassified. They were doing cloud seeding, which is where you release some substances into the air that are kind of designed to coax the moisture out of the clouds.
Yeah, it's like silver iodide, I believe.
And the idea was to extend the monsoon season to try to wash out the supply trails that the North Vietnamese were using. So, like, it does exist. The issue is that the effect is fairly marginal. They think that you can maybe get 10% more out of a rain formation. You can get a little extra moisture, but it's not that the government can just create a hurricane wherever they want, right? So there's an element of truth to it that makes it sound feasible, but then people, you know, blow it out of proportion to the, you know, the government's controlling the weather, quote unquote.
Although I must say that it's conceptually very cool that we can shoot silver at the sky to make it rain.
Oh, it's absolutely cool. and I think there were people even suggesting that one of the Ukrainian leadership was saying that Russia was manipulating the weather to extend the mud season last year during the battle around Bakhmut. It's never been muddy before.
Yeah. Just ask Model.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, of course, directed energy weapons are not a conspiracy, and the development is going all over the world for some time now, and US, for example, is developing directed energy weapons to counter hypersonic missiles, and China and France and Russia and UK, they're all doing it.
Yeah,
but they're all a bit different.
We have the Peresviet system, which supposedly is powerful enough to be used even against satellites.
Laser-based system, right? Yes. It shoots lasers. Yes.
Yeah, and the UK has a Dragonfire system that they're quite proud of.
Yeah, there's a lot of such systems, laser-based, particle beams, microwaves. There are long-range acoustic devices for crowd control. I've never seen one in action, but there are plenty of photos of them during various protests, and they can damage your hearing. So what is your favorite unconventional weapon of this kind? And do you think it will ever be viable in an actual military conflict?
Well, if I had to pick a favorite, I would probably go with the American Active Denial System, which uses microwaves to make you feel hot, flushed, and itchy. And then supposedly the sensation disappears the moment you step out of the path of the beam. So you just feel like you're warming up. If you know the effect of laying, you know, shirtless under the sun on a summer day, and you can feel yourself slowly baking, right? It's supposedly it feels just like that, but instantaneously. And then you feel like hot and your skin gets all red and itchy. And I just think that's hilarious because it's a crowd control system based on essentially making people uncomfortable, right? It doesn't even cause burns. It's just a sensational thing. And so I think that's hilarious. The problem with these systems, though, is they tend to be rather large, right? Like the active denial system has to be mounted, you know, on like a Humvee or a truck. So in relation to the Havana syndrome issue, it's not like this is something that a secret KGB man could have in his pocket and he sneaks up to your window and he shoots you with the microwave and then runs, right? You would notice a large armored personnel carrier parked in your driveway aiming through your window, right? So it's the size of the system that makes them impractical. And they actually deployed some of these systems to Afghanistan, the American Army did, but they never used them. They just were not practicable for rapid deployment.
I've heard from a Russian soldier I talked to that some of the anti-drone rifles, so obviously the market has expanded a lot in the last couple of years, and some of the cheaper models, they are very uncomfortable to use. And like when you use them, you can feel your eyeballs heating up and things like that.
Sounds unpleasant.
Yeah, very much so.
So they're carrying portable active denial systems and hurting themselves.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And not actually shooting down any drones in the process. Yeah, interesting. So there is an elephant in the room, and we already touched upon this, the weather changing kind of device or system. So let's discuss HAARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, that was more or less a copy of the Soviet SURA project. Let's start with SURA. It was, I believe, in 60s or 70s project. It was radiating 260 megawatts at 9.5 megahertz in the ionosphere. To research, to simply study how the ionosphere reacts to those waves. But it was, of course, funded by the Soviet Defense Department. SURA was built in a closed-off Gorky region, modern-day Nizhny Novgorod. And back then in Gorky, the region was full of scientists creating various weapon systems, doomsday weapon, whatever. It was closed for all tourists. American HAARP on Alaska is basically the same exact deal. In the case of the HAARP, it was built by the British Aerospace Limited Advanced Technologies, which is the BAE. I'm not sure how it's pronounced. Have any of you heard of this corporation, the British Aerospace Limited?
Yeah, and I believe that HAARP is also partially funded by DARPA, which is the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, which is sort of the American, if any conspiracy theory sort of weapon seems to come out of them. So that's why a lot of people think that HAARP has weaponization applications, even though officially they're just studying, you know, the ionosphere.
But who would actually pay this amount of money in USSR or in the US to study for science purposes?
I mean, both sides did spend billions on completely useless ideas during the Cold War, to be honest.
But it's not completely useless if Americans replicated it.
If I remember correctly, in the case of Sura, the Soviet Ministry of Defense stopped funding the project after it didn't produce any interesting results, or results that were interesting to the Ministry of Defense.
Now, I don't know if you gentlemen are aware, but HAARP was in the news here a few months ago because one of Trump's Twitter surrogates suggested that HAARP had been used to create a blizzard in Iowa to prevent Trump's voters from going to vote in the Iowa caucuses. You may have missed that, but apparently it's being used for domestic political manipulation as well.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is that it basically was abandoned in 2013. It stopped being active, working. And in 2022, it resumed its scientific research of the ionosphere, which is a very peculiar timing, I would say. And also the fact that it's placed in Alaska, and the only similar project that exists in Europe is built in Norway. So quite interesting placing here. And the British Aerospace Limited is an interesting company itself that was responsible for building it in the first place. So it basically used to be the world's leading arms dealer. And it was selling military aircraft to the Suharto regime in Indonesia during the genocide, I believe, and to Pinochet regime in Chile. And then it also owns a large stock of Kazakhstan. It makes shady deals with Saudi Arabia, prime British business. And it's also incredibly corrupt. It provides all kinds of weaponry in Africa during the civil wars. So Victor Boot stuff, but a giant corporation. Yeah, interesting. Why would they build a HAARP?
I don't know, and I'm out of my wheelhouse here. But is there something different about the ionosphere towards the poles? Is that why it's all these stations are in, you know, fairly close to the Arctic Circle?
I think so. There was some concern in Russia when HAARP was being built and launched that theoretically, if you do something wrong and put enough energy in it, it could, like, I don't know, induce a pole switch or something like that, and that would be very bad.
It sounds bad.
Personally, my favorite kind of somewhat strange weapons are obscure or unusual uses for nuclear weapons. It's a topic that has been fascinating me recently. Stuff like the American LIM-49 Spartan, which was an anti-ballistic missile system that is basically you fire a giant nuke at an incoming ICBM. And that concept, I find that it's like the final stage of fighting fire with fire. It's like you just fire a nuke at a nuke.
Yeah, well, here we have to be careful because, you know, there are people in our sphere who think that Russia has used nuclear weapons in Ukraine. So, for example, the large explosion last year when they hit the stockpile of depleted uranium.
Khmelnytsky, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's an undercurrent of thought. There's a group of people who are convinced that nuclear weapons have actually been fairly consistently used, and that the way governments have avoided full nuclear exchange is just to pretend they're conventional munitions.
I feel like if we started using like the smallest tactical nukes in Ukraine. I feel like if it became public knowledge, if we actually did that, it would actually like be a very bad thing because it was just completely normalized the use of that, because everyone would see that the world doesn't end if you drop like a nuclear artillery shell on a trench and system. And yeah, then everyone would start doing that.
Yeah, we bring back the Davy Crockett nuclear bazooka.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So in any case, I was talking, the LAM-49 Spartan, it has an interesting concept. One of the warheads was like a neutron bomb that would basically disable the electronics in the enemy nuclear warheads. I found that a very, very interesting concept. There was also a Soviet system like that, the one variation of the S-75, I think SA-2 in NATO reporting name. It also had like nuclear surface-to-air missiles to shoot down enemy planes and stuff like that. That is also a really cool idea. Or like, in general, you know, America, I believe the name was Project Plowshare, like civilian applications for nuclear weapons. And the Soviet name was much cooler. So the project itself was significantly larger in scale, and it also had a very whimsically bureaucratic Khrushchevite name, Ядерные взрывы для народного хозяйства, which sounds much better in English, actually, because it has an alliteration. Nuclear explosions for the national economy. I think that is a very beautiful name. And they did like, they also had like nuclear death charges for anti-submarine warfare. But, they did seismic sounding in Siberia with nukes for geological research. And of course, there is Lake Chagan in Kazakhstan, which was created by nuclear testing.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. There was even suggestions under the American program to use use thermonuclear bombs to cut holes in mountains to widen canals. So, for example, they wanted to widen the Panama Canal by just blowing giant holes. And they also suggested making artificial harbors. So you just strategically plant some thermonuclear bombs where you want the harbor, and it'll just blast a little hole out of the side of the continent.
There was also a project when I was reading up on this one to make Fallout New Vegas real. They wanted to basically when they were constructing the I-40, they wanted to blast basically a road through the Mojave Desert to make it easier to construct a road, and use like several dozen nuclear explosions to do that.
Yeah, I mean, they're all very funny. I think, though, that part of it is that in the early Cold War period, you know, the 1950s especially, nukes were like all the rage, and they were soaking up budgets in the United States especially. Like, you had one of the Secretary of States under, I think it was Truman, said that they were anticipating just shutting down the Navy and the Marines because you didn't need them if you had the Air Force and nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. Right. So you had American bureaucratic structures were scrambling to try and have nuclear uses for themselves as a way to get access to funds. Like, that's why the Army created tactical nuclear weapons, was because Army leadership felt, if we don't have nukes, you know, we're going to be starved for funds, starved for personnel. So we need a role in the nuclear battlefield. Right? And that's also why the Navy jumped on submarine launched nuclear weapons, mm-hmm. because there was a lot of sense in the US in particular that if you didn't have a nuclear role for yourself, you were going to become obsolete very, very quickly. So, of course, you come up with insane, I mean, in hindsight, they just seem like insane applications for nuclear weapons just as a way to secure funding for yourself.
Yeah, of course, that makes sense. Yeah. It's still pretty funny. I wish they had at least made some of them real just to see if it would actually work. I mean, I can imagine, like, if you're an autistic civil engineer, and if you approach the topic with enough autism and you just view nuclear weapons as very, very large mining charges, then it opens up a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's a big country.
In both cases, yeah.
Yeah, you can create an exclusion zone and try it out. And then that creates jobs for remediation as well.
Yeah, the nuclear New Deal.
There is also an extreme nothing happens kind of theory that nuclear weapons aren't real because, well, I haven't seen them or something like that. But there is, I think, a more popular version that was spread like 2 years ago that, oh, you don't need to fear Russia because all the nukes are out of commission. They're all broken. There's nothing left. And it's also pretty funny. I'm just curious whether all this hype and all those projects and all those weird weapons will ever come to an actual military use, or will it forever stay in the realm of speculation, or just like nukes that will be basically forbidden to ever use by the international community?
Well, I mean, the way I like to think about it is, in World War One, gas, when gas started to be used, a lot of people thought that this was going to, you know, revolutionize warfare, and that poison gas would be sort of a permanent fixture of conventional warfare.
Now we're cooking with gas.
Yeah, exactly. But it never became practicable, right? Like science will make inroads into new technologies, and sometimes they just don't have the application that you think they will, and they get discarded.
There is this folk myth about World War II that, like, the Germans didn't use gas weapons in World War II because Hitler had experienced their effects directly in the trenches of World War I, and that's why he didn't want to use gas weapons. And that is such a stupid, whimsical folk story. For one thing, yes, they are just not very effective, especially they are useless in maneuver warfare. Like, what are you going to do with them if you have, like, your tank divisions 30 miles ahead of your infantry? Who are you going to gas? It makes no sense. There were some situations during which the Germans have used them, actually. If I remember correctly, they did use poison gas weapons in Odessa to smoke out the catacombs where Soviet partisans were hiding. They did use them on occasion in the Donbas, actually, also against mines. And they were considering using them in Stalingrad. That's actually the context of when... So the actual reason why the Germans never, like, used them en masse in World War II and never even tried to use them, like, in large scale, is that Churchill openly threatened the Germans that he would just drop all the gas weapons that the Royal Air Force can carry over on German civilians. He just openly said that they would start unrestricted total gas warfare against Germany if they did use gas weapons on the Eastern Front. And this actually happened because Stalin asked Churchill to say that. Well, that's a bit of conjecture on my part, but there is a direct correlation here in that Stalin did receive a report from Soviet military intelligence that the Germans were stockpiling gas weapons in the beginning of, during the Battle of Stalingrad, and that they were intending to use them. So it's not unreasonable, I believe, that they would have. So for Case Blue, basically, that they were stockpiling gas weapons. And I think if they had used them in Stalingrad, that would have been quite effective. So, yeah. Thank you, Churchill, I guess.
You're telling me it wasn't because Hitler had PTSD from his mustard gassing, and he didn't want to inflict that on anyone else.
No, it's really a lot of people believe that, like, even normies.
They believe interesting things.
When normies talk about Hitler and gas, they're talking about some other matter and not its military use. But let's not go into that. So anyway.
That's enough for a free segment. The full episode is available for our glorious allies on Patreon and Gumroad. See you there.